Hello, and welcome to our series of podcasts for Equine Health Week 2026 in partnership with Agria. Now, if you've spent any length of time around horses, then it's likely that you've had some experience of lameness. While not a disease itself, lameness is a symptom of an underlying problem and a sign that your horse is in pain. Sometimes that pain's quite minor and can be resolved nice and quickly, but other times it can be a bit more serious. Due to there being so many potential causes of lameness, it's not always immediately obvious what the source of the problem is. Therefore, there are a number of tests that your vet can do to try and reach a diagnosis, and that's what we are going to discuss in today's episode. Joining me to discuss this is Rob Alton. He is our para dressage team vet and also looks after the British dressage under 21 team. While not on team duties, he works in daily practice at Scott Dunn's Equine Clinic, where he spends much of his time investigating lameness and poor performance and carrying out pre-purchase examinations. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you very much.
So let's dive straight in there. If you've got a horse that you think might be lame, what are some of the sort of the signs, the indicators that there might be a bit of a problem there?
So the signs can be really variable, actually. So what we're looking at with lameness is an asymmetry in the gait, and that often types of lamenesses, or a lot of the types of lamenesses we're seeing with horses, especially in sport, is that the onset can be quite insidious. So it's, you know, a really gradual thing that the horse is just not doing better because we maybe have some joint disease or something creeping in gradually. So we don't always see a sudden change from one day to the next. And so these symptoms can vary dramatically. Sometimes that can be just a reluctance to work in general, stopping at fences, for example, a change in behavior when ridden or even when tacking up, just that the horse is going to be, signs the horse is unhappy or uncomfortable. Often what we can see with horses in sport is finding certain movements more difficult. You know, they were doing one movement fine one day, and now that's slowly finding much harder for the horse. That can be a symptom. There can be an issue creeping in. Obviously, we have the more overt lamenesses where we have a marked asymmetry in gait, which those are usually more acute onsets, such as with soft tissue injuries. Often they can be a much more acute onset.
So I guess it's kind of a case, again, with much of the diseases we've talked this week, it's about kind of knowing your individual horse so that when you've got those little, as you say, those early onset symptoms that you notice, right, okay, actually, he's not feeling himself today. He's not, you know, going as forward as he usually is, or he's having some problems, and knowing those so that you can spot them before we get to a sort of a full-blown problem. Because I guess many of us, when we think of lameness, we think of kind of hopping in on three legs, and actually, as you're saying, it's far more subtle than that.
Yeah, it certainly can be, and certainly a lot of cases I deal with, it's much more subtle. That's a really helpful point when you say about knowing what's normal for that horse. So listening to the rider, the owner, is really key. I see a lot of horses that I do see regularly. So then I'm seeing them every 2-3 months, perhaps, and then, you know, not seeing them every day, then I can often spot the differences, you know, more readily than sometimes the owner might be thinking it's a small thing creeping in. But if I haven't seen it in 3 months and then we see it, we can often pick up bigger change. So a lot of horses I deal with, it is about regular assessments with them to be sure we're on top of things before it's a big problem, you know, catch problems while they're little.
And I guess as well, having that sort of team effort approach with obviously the owner and the vet, but also bringing in people like the physio, the coach, people like that who are, again, seeing this horse on a regular basis with an eye on performance.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we get a lot of feedback from physios, you know, if they have issues that they're seeing again and again. And they're constantly dealing with the same problems with the horse every time they see it. And that's often an indicator to get the vet involved that maybe there's something underlying and why these, you know, soft tissue pains and stuff can keep coming back. Listening to your farrier, is he getting more difficult to shoe with one leg? He doesn't like holding one leg up as long. You know, all these little things that can be clues. So it's really important to listen to everybody in your team.
So at what point then might you think, right, okay, now it's time I really should call the vet, you know, rather than say, give him a couple of days off and see how he is?
So I think certainly it depends on the degree. Obviously, if you've got a marked lameness, then, you know, marked asymmetry, you want to have that seen through quite quickly. obviously things, if you have swellings or heat anywhere in a leg or joint, that you want those looked at as soon as possible. I often do see even subtle swellings where people think they should watch it a few days, or they carry on working, where those can be quite important to be seen quite early on. Obviously, soft tissue injuries, the earlier you can spot it and back off or treat it, then the better your outcome and the shorter your duration of rest should be. I see that quite a lot where they think it's maybe a little thing they can monitor for a while. And in the meantime, you're just making that condition worse and worse. And then when you do finally get to it, it's going to take a lot longer. But certainly, anytime you just think the horse is unhappy, uncomfortable, that's the time you should really just be start to take a look then, because earlier checks, you're going to have a probably better outcome.
Absolutely. So, okay, so you've had that phone call then from the owner, horse isn't quite right, and you've come onto the yard, the horse is brought out. What's the first thing then that you're doing as a vet?
Well, the first conversation is with just a conversation, exactly that. So I want to talk through what the horse is doing, what's expected of it. So what job's it doing, what level's it doing, and what is the expectation of the owner for the future for this horse? So start with those things. What they feel, if they think there's an immediate problem, or sometimes it might just be a routine checkup, what is the horse finding difficult in the work? Is one of my first questions. Is the movements even one way to another? Is it better on one rein in trot, better on one rein in canter? Is it, willing in defenses? All these things can come up as part of my history to find out what they feel there could be a problem in. Obviously, if they think they felt the horse off on one day, where did they feel it was coming from, or what did they observe? What was the horse doing when it happened, and what has the horse been doing in the days leading up to this? Has there been any abnormal events or anything that, in retrospect, you can think of that, yes, there was an awful lot of skid marks in front of the fence the last couple of days, or yes, the box was quite messed up when I came in the other morning? All these things you think back upon. So taking a full picture is the starting point.
So I guess as an owner, you kind of, after making that call to the vet, maybe it's time to be detective mode. And as you say, look for those subtle symptoms, maybe make a list or make a note of them so that when your vet is asking you those questions, you've got the answers there ready to go. And yeah, making sure that there's as much information there as possible to help the start process of this diagnosis.
Absolutely. I do have some clients that they actually keep journals. So if they've had a training day and maybe something was particularly difficult, or like I say, the box was messed up one morning, they just jot it down, because then it becomes very helpful when you get to a problem or you get to a point you need to call somebody out, that you can look back and you can think, oh, actually on that day he was also doing that, and 3 weeks ago he did the same thing. So you can, what seems like nothing at the time, when you add it together, builds a bigger picture, which is can be very helpful.
Okay, so you've got your history then. I guess now it must be time to get hands on and actually have a feel of that horse.
Yeah. So often I'll be, while we're having this conversation, you can just be observing the horse in the stable. What's it doing? How's it standing? How's its posture? Picking up other clues on what might be abnormal about a horse. First off, too, I just look back at the conformation of the horse. What could this be predisposed to? Is he straight through the hock? Is he long in the pastern? How is the muscle development on the horse? Is it symmetrical one way? Has he got muscle development in the right places? A common thing, you might go and look at a horse and it's got a really overdeveloped underside of the neck rather than the top line being developed, and that could, be a starting point of clues about the way that horse has been moving over an extended period that could give clues to an underlying issue. So that's my first point of call, is just the stand back, look at the whole animal. And then I start an assessment sort of head to tail, and going over the muscle groups, feeling for any sensitivity reaction, palpating down through the muscle groups, obviously down through the legs, feeling the joints, feeling your suspensories, your tendons, feeling for any adverse reactions, any sensitivities, any swellings, any resistant to movement, if you're flexing up to the joint, and you get to an area that the horse, you can just feel in your hand when they just feel that they're uncomfortable at times. So start that full body assessment, and that will often give you, if there is an overt lameness, you start to get clues about what you might be suspecting once you see the horse move. It may not always fit with what you see when you see the horse moves, but it's a good starting point to have a few things in your head, like, oh, he was a little reactive on that suspensory. Is that him being shy or sensitive? We'll see when we move him. Same with the, you know, palpating back. Sometimes you can get an overreaction sometimes from some horses if they're just a bit shy or a bit sensitive or they don't know you. So you've got to be a little bit cautious in how you initially interpret your palpations.
And you mentioned there about palpating the back. I guess you're feeling the whole of the horse, not just the legs, because again, we think lameness, we tend to think just the legs, but it is more of a sort of whole body problem sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see lots of horses that reactive in the base of the neck when you're palpating the muscles. Well, that's often a forelimb issue. You know, they might have a forelimb lameness or subtle forelimb lameness. They're compensating how they're bracing and holding themselves. You know, if you have tight through the back, that can be if they're not flexing through the back because they're not engaging their hind legs, or you may find that one side of the back's very reactive. That's probably not always going to be your primary area. That can be because of the way the horse is moving, making that area sore. And so perhaps then I'll spend more time on the, you know, if he's very sore on the right side of his loin, then I'll be looking through that right hind limb much more, because there's probably a reason the way it's moving that's creating that issue.
And again, this is where I guess it kind of comes back to having that relationship with the physio, because if the physio is treating the horse regularly and feeling those things, and consistently he is tight in his hamstrings, or as you say, on, you know, around his neck or in his traps area or something like that, that's going to help. And if the owner can say, oh, actually he was treated 6 weeks ago and that area was tight,
and it's come back again, and you know, that's not just a one-off thing. So yeah, that's very, it's really, really important to have all the information with those, with horses especially. A lot of what we see, a lot of lamenesses, they can actually be bilateral. So we're seeing, especially with joint disease, we're seeing the issue coming in from both sides. So sometimes it's just horse isn't have big a step or not moving out as well as it normally does if both front feet are hurting. So we may not see it as an overt lameness, but these other clues, you know, can help point us in that direction of where we want to start looking.
It is really, I mean, I said earlier about sort of the owners going into detective mode, but this is essentially you as a vet going into detective mode, because it is all those little clues that you're using to pull the bigger picture together and get to the bottom of a problem that isn't easy to solve a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the same as a vetting. I always say a vetting, you're there to be the detective a bit as well, because, you know, you're starting with a blank sheet and often very little information, but all these little points together, you know, create a picture, and no single point in itself, you know, is the answer or the end all and be all. I see this a lot when you're doing flexions, that people, you know, say, oh, I don't like a flexion because, you know what, if you flexed me, I wouldn't be sound. But it's not the end all and be all how they respond to a flexion. It's just a piece of the puzzle and a piece of the bigger picture. And it's how you interpret it with all the other things you're seeing, whether it's of significance or not.
Yeah. So I guess then the next stage in your detective work is going to be looking at that horse moving, which I'm assuming is probably going to start with walking and trotting them up in a straight line.
Yeah, absolutely. So start with a walking assessment, walk them up and down, see how the feet are landing, see how they're using themselves. Just watch how the body is using itself as well. Like, is he guarding anywhere? Is he leaning one way? Really key about just even footfall. Obviously, then we're trotting them, looking at same things, looking for symmetry or irregularities in the gait. Is there a toe drag? Is the head moving? Is one leg dropping? All of these assessments. And then we move on to flexion tests, which I would, you know, be doing as a standard, and do all four limbs, unless you've got an obvious overt reason you're looking at a horse. If I was just looking at it from an initial assessment point, I would certainly aim to be looking at flexing all four limbs. And then we would see the horse lunged on a hard circle, on a soft circle, looking for differences in patterns of movement based on what surface it's on. And then in many cases, we'll then see the horse ridden, because, you know, you can pick up, especially in subtle things, you can pick up a lot more under saddle that you may not see just in hand.
Yeah, I guess particularly with the ridden stuff, it may well be that because the riders, I'm guessing, sitting, more weight on a certain side or something like that, that's going to help you again. It might bring out the problem more, or at least help you work out. Actually, they might be sore because the rider's not sitting straight in the saddle, the weight's not evenly distributed, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The rider impact can be certainly significant, and certainly in some cases it can be the cause of the problem, but that does happen from time to time. But we do weight of a rider and the way a horse has to actually work when it's under saddle as well is what we're looking at, is the quality of the paces, is it even both reins, one rein to the other in the lunge and the canter. A lot of subtle issues. How's the horse reacting? How's his behavior under saddle? So we see lots of clues there. In ridden assessments, there's a few movements that I really like to do for, especially for subtle lamenesses, which is serpentines, looking at change of rein, because there may be subtle things that the horse isn't as good in the contact coming onto one bend as the other bend, and that can indicate, subtle issues going on, often behind. If the horse is at a stage of training where it can do leg yields or half passes, then I want to see those from behind and looking for the asymmetry, any change in movement, because some things like that are more challenging for a horse, we can get a lot more information from.
Absolutely, I guess, because those aren't the sort of movements that, say, the owner's seen them doing in the field, or you're seeing again in that trotting up process that we've talked about. It's requiring a bit more in terms of flexion and bending and using their body more.
Absolutely, yeah. And often, as a rider, they can't always, they can't tell what the horse is doing in those movements. They can feel a lot oftentimes, but to see it and feel it are two very different things. And unless they've got, and actually, a lot of things end up coming to me based on the trainers spotted things on the ground that the rider couldn't necessarily feel. And then they start to, start investigating from that standpoint. So eyes on the ground for those different movements is really important.
And again, this is coming back to that teamwork aspect that we've touched on several times there. So this is kind of your, I guess, your basic first stage. And a lot of the time this may well give you an answer, or at least the starting point. But if it's proving a little bit more problematic, or maybe you feel that there's a bit more investigation required, what then are some of the tests in your arsenal that you can use to delve a little deeper into this?
So now, once we've done the assessment and we've got, say, an area of concern, now we want to block the lameness, because we want to start with using some regional anesthetic in the limb. Usually we start at the bottom and work our way up just to be sure we don't miss anything. Sometimes we can target an area if we're sure it's quite specific, like if we're blocking a joint first in some cases, if we, based on the history, the presentation, and from previous experience in of course it looks like this often can be this, we'll maybe start with some of those other blocks versus just starting at the bottom, working our way up. Obviously that two reasons, time and costs, are both reasons that we may alter our normal process, obviously. But the blocking stage is really, really quite important, quite critical, because it helps confirm that that is the area of pain. Because if you started just with some imaging, you may find all kinds of findings, but we don't necessarily know if those findings are significant. And unless we can rule out that with the blocking, that we blocked that area, and then the horse was sounder, went moved better, was happier, all these things, then we know that that's the area we need to delve into. And on the contrary, sometimes you may image an area and it looks fine from the imagings that you've used, but doesn't mean there might not be an underlying problem there, that you've just maybe not picked the right imaging modality.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us quite nicely onto which my next question, which was, could you maybe explain to us some of the different types of imaging that you might be using to look at a horse?
Yes, obviously in first assessment, first case scenarios, radiographs and ultrasounds are our obviously two main staples. So obviously radiographs, we're just looking at changes in the bone, changes in bone density, lots of things, but only bony things we can see there. What we are missing on those, or what the limitations is changes happening in the cartilage. And I think that's where sometimes we have sometimes people want to rely on radiographs too much and forget the limitations of them. So just because we x-ray a hock or a stifle, and it looks fine radiographically, we can't assess what the cartilage is doing, and it doesn't mean there's not joint disease started in that. By the time we get to radiographic changes, you know, your disease is obviously quite progressed, unless we're just looking at a chip or something. But if you're looking at arthritic change, obviously that's quite a lot of stages down the line. So, you know, I sometimes hear people say, well, I don't want to pursue treatment if the radiographs look fine. But if we wait to a stage where the radiographs are fine, then we have a much more diseased joint. And if we can intervene earlier and we confirm that that joint is an issue, then we know there's probably a cartilage lesion starting, which will end up leading to bony change. But if we can intervene sooner, we'll have a healthier joint for much longer, hopefully, would be the aim, and then a happier, sounder horse much longer. Ultrasound, obviously, that's looking at soft tissues. So mainly, you know, tendons, ligaments is what we're assessing with our soft tissue. So looking for changes in fiber pattern, looking for lesions, often, and size of tendons and ligaments as well. Comparing, very useful thing. Sometimes we, with subtle issues, it may just be that the tendon or ligament's inflamed and maybe a bit larger, not necessarily a full hole yet or a tear yet, but we can see it starting to get diseased. And luckily, we've got two legs on a horse, two front legs, two back legs, so we can always have something to compare to if we're not sure if that's maybe significant. Is it a little bit enlarged? Is it? We can always compare it to the other leg, and that gives us a really good basis going forward. So those are our two big imaging that we would use on a pretty daily basis. We have obviously more advanced imaging with, if it becomes necessary, MRI, CTs. And so MRI strength lies more in soft tissues, not as good sometimes as cartilage, but, you know, can be good for bone edema, but not as good for just bony problems in itself. That's where CT is stronger. CT is much better imaging for if you feel you've got a bone issue there. In an ideal world, you would like to have imaging from both if you could have a region, but obviously cost implications and availability of these things can influence what you may or may not use. But yeah, often because they're imaging different different types of tissues or types of tissues in different ways, it gives the more information we can have, the better. And some of these can be used. So like when to choose one versus another, it would depend on the case and what your feeling was. What is the likely cause of a lameness? What you probably think you're looking for might determine which route you go. Also, depending on where on the horse it is it something we can access through other imaging like ultrasound or radiographs? Often soft tissue lesions deep in the foot where the tendon inserts onto the bottom of the pedal bone. We can't get a good image of that very well with ultrasound. So that's a case where an MRI is really helpful to, you know, access areas we couldn't otherwise get to or get convincing diagnostic images of with the conventional ultrasounds or radiographs.
And I guess as well, it's probably going to play into as well the resources of the owner as well, because obviously an ultrasound or an x-ray you can do at the yard, so you don't necessarily have to travel the horse, whereas an MRI or a CT, that's going to require a trip to the hospital because it's obviously a much that's larger, right. Not exactly transportable piece of equipment.
Absolutely.
So that must be something you have to factor in as well.
Yes, absolutely. And obviously then, you know, cost implications as well, like say with others aside from availability of travel and all of that. And so often, you know, they won't necessarily be our first line of imaging. So we'd start with the others, maybe come up with a treatment plan or a rest plan or rehab plan or whatever we might do, depending on what we think the issue is. And then perhaps have that in your back pocket as the next step to go to if we're not seeing improvements or we want to just delve deeper into get a more accurate diagnosis. So all those things can play a part in deciding when and what you use.
There's obviously there's so many stages to all this. It's going to be, I guess in a way there is a bit of a drawn out process to it. And as you say, it's you try one thing and if that doesn't work, you try the next thing and you try. So it's not always a cut and dried, simple problem to fix. That seems to be what the sort of the impression is here.
Absolutely. So obviously with some things, you can have a tendon each and the horse does a hole in its tendon. That's obvious. That's your problem. And then you can come up with a plan around that. But a lot of, especially in performance cases, it's often not just one problem as well. So there can be, you know, everything's connected and, you know, they may start with a bit of OA in the hocks or osteoarthritis in the hock joints creeping in. That's affecting how it's moving. Now it's getting sore in its back as a result. It's maybe starting to offload and it's overloading one forelimb more than the other. It's compensating. And then you start getting some soft tissue niggles. So there's lots of unpicking, we can say, that you may end doing and kind of coming about it in a logical way of starting with your big areas of concern and then whittling it down. You see that a lot of times when you're actually blocking lamenesses that you think you have an obvious area of one problem and you block and then suddenly you actually see you may have a multi-limb lameness. It's just the one limb was much worse and that's why it was showing the most. And you have, yeah, multiple potential issues going on at one time.
It is a bit common. Of, yeah, sort of opening Pandora's box sometimes in a way, this, isn't it?
Yes, it can be. Yeah. But that shouldn't make people scared to go down this road, because actually by intervening sooner, you end up with, you know, less of this knock-on effect going on with multiple areas kind of becoming involved.
Absolutely. As you say, it's that early intervention means that you're not seeing the compensatory that then develops into a problem further down the line. Yes. So you then end up maybe with that multiple limb lamenesses and things like that. So, yeah, people paying attention to your horse and getting the vet out early does pay off in this respect. And obviously, this is a, you know, it's a developing field, and the tools at the vet's disposal and the knowledge at the vet's disposal is going to be developing over time. Are there any sort of new or recent developments in the field that are helping you and other vets out there?
Yes, yes, of course. There's now we're getting more technology in aid of asymmetry. I don't want to say lameness diagnosis, because they don't really diagnose lameness. What they're looking at is asymmetry. So there's a common one that we've started using quite a lot now, which is just much simpler than some of the previous gait analysis symptoms, which involve sensors at different points on the body, which can be very good and very useful. Now there's a very simple app we can use on a phone, and it video the horse, and it can look for asymmetry patterns in the horse and help flag issues that in one limb or another. So they can look at like impact asymmetries or push off asymmetries. They have obviously limitations, so they're very important to look at in the picture and what you see clinically, what is going on with the horse, and also looking at change over time. That's where I think a lot of these asymmetry assessment tools are really good at looking at change over time, because not any horse is going to be perfectly symmetrical. There's always going to be one leg that's different or multiple legs that are different to others, but it may be normal for that horse, or it may not be a clinical problem or a stage where it's causing any issues. Monitoring for that changing over time is what's probably more important.
Yeah, I guess in a way it's like people being right and left-handed. You do tend to be stronger or you know, just generally better on one side than the other, and our horses are the same, and that's something that has to be factored in when we're making these diagnoses.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the impact that the rider has on, because the horse obviously is going to have innate in asymmetries, like you said, right, left-handed. But then the rider being innately asymmetric as well is going to help potentiate that, you know, probably with the horse. You know, sometimes when a horse is, you know, stiffer one side, it could be because the owner finds it easier to work on the other side much more. The owner's, you know, or the rider is influencing that pattern. So there can be... It's not always just the horse, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, it comes back to this sort of holistic approach to the whole thing, which is, again, it seems to be a common theme in the topics we've been discussing this week, is the holistic side of all of this, and actually how all these little things all impact each other to form the bigger picture that we're looking at.
Actually, I would say something that should be considered is the general management of the horse. That's another factor that can be part of our maybe a lameness assessment, or even part of then building plans on how to reduce future lameness or going forward. So I think those are all parts of what's valuable about a lameness assessment, is also just identifying areas of weakness rather than potentially lameness, and how we can then work towards building strength, you know, maybe slight change in shoeing, how we support that horse better to try to prevent breakdown in future problems.
Absolutely. Again, this is coming back to that team around you. And once we've, you know, they're key in helping identify the problems or spotting the problems early on. And they're also then going to be key throughout both the sort of the diagnosis process and also then what comes after, which obviously we're not going to go into great depth today, because we would have to be here all day, possibly all week, because there's so many different outcomes. But yeah, no, I think that's really important to again highlight the importance of having those people around you, those trusted people. And if you had to pick one kind of key takeaway that you want people listening, the one thing to have in the back of their head as they head off for the rest of the day, off to the yard or whatever it is, what would be that one takeaway?
Don't ignore early signs, you know, even if it's not that you need to think you want to get a vet out straight away. The journal idea would be a good thing to start logging things a bit, and then you'll start to see what is important, because what was a small thing one day, if it's again the next day, or the physio spotted something and it's the same the next time, you really want to start looking into those before they become a bigger issue. So if you can't always do regular checks or intervene straight away, at least start writing things down so you can then have something to reflect on, and it'll become more apparent to you when there's a bigger change.
Absolutely. I think that's really great advice there. There's some good homework for people listening. And I think probably as well, also, it's probably worth flagging that if you have a little concern, it's always best to ring your vet, even if they're not necessarily coming out. It's far better to phone them and have them say, oh, actually, no, that doesn't sound like something to worry about. Or as we've said, maybe do rest in for a day or two, whatever, rather than assuming that because you phoned, it's instantly going to become a big thing. The vets would far rather give the advice over the phone than sort of it blow up into a big thing if needs be.
Absolutely. And I think that we do get this sometimes where, you know, owners of horses, they feel like when it becomes a lameness investigation, it's going to become very expensive, and it's going to entail, you know, like you say, opening Pandora's box, or they may find things they don't want to know about. But I think just having that discussion with your vet up front and say, this is my expectation, this is what I'm looking for, this is, and there's always a way that we can adapt and prioritize, you know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Absolutely. And the other thing we haven't touched on here, which is probably worth sort of mentioning at this point, is also your insurance as well, and making sure that you know what the terms and conditions are in your insurance. Because if, as we've said, hopefully this is quite a simple, easy process and isn't particularly expensive, but if it is and it does become something that you're needing to have them go into the hospital, have an MRI, have a CT scan there, it may well be something that you want to have a conversation with your insurance company about. So if you know things like your excess up front, that is going to help, particularly the, you know, in terms of having the conversation with the vet as to the next stages.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Rob. This has been a really interesting discussion. It's something, as I say, all of us in the horse world have probably had some sort of experience with this at some point, but it is interesting to go through those different stages and kind of get into the mindset of the vet, the one who is doing this diagnosis. So it's been a really interesting discussion. So thank you very much for giving up your time to join us today.
No trouble. I'm glad to be here.
And we are very glad to have you. It's been brilliant. Now, if you've been listening along to this and it's been really interesting, make sure that you check out all the other stuff we've been putting out for Equine Health Week this week. You can find it on our social media channels. There have been all the podcast episodes, which you can find wherever it is that you found this one, on whatever platform it is that you're using. And we are also collating everything we have talked about this week on a digital hub on our website, which you can find at www.britishequestrian.org.uk. There'll be a banner at the top of the homepage, or you can go to the Equine tab and follow through from there. Everything will be there. We'll be updating it every day with all the stuff as it comes out, and it will obviously be a lasting resource going forward into the future as well. Make sure you join us for the rest of Equine Health Week. There's some more really, really interesting topics coming up, all focused on how we can help our horses to generally just feel a bit better, safeguard their well-being and their welfare. So we hope you'll join us again soon. Thank you for listening.